Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
All right, I've said it before. Let me say it once again. There are not that many great rivalries left in the NBA. But if you want to start and you want to pick one, start with the Clippers and the Rockets. For years now, it's been good. Really spicy when these two get together. Last night in Houston was no exception. Let's get a couple of the necessary details out of the way. Houston beat LA 102-93. James Harden had 47. Now that should tell you something. That I'm saying that James Harden had 47, and that is not the focus of the game. Far from it. Because with 91 seconds left in that game, Clippers head coach Doc Rivers got into it with the officials. Then Rockets guard Austin Rivers was the third man into that fight. Except he was not on his dad's side. In fact, quite the opposite. You know, there are certain moments in life, as a father, you'll never forget. You know, first words, first steps, maybe first home run. First time your son calls for you to be ejected from an NBA game. Roll it.
Doc Rivers is just about on his way out of here.
And Austin Rivers wants him to get thrown out of the game. Austin Rivers is asking for his dad to be ejected.
That's because he's on the Rockets' side of the court trying to get a word in with the officials.
Austin Rivers wants his dad to be tossed. That was funny. Austin Rivers teeing up his old man.
And now he's waving him off.
And now he got tossed. Tell him to get out of here. Tell him I'll call you later. He's telling him I'm going to call you later. Give him the phone sign. That's incredible.
Rockets radio. Normally, the local homers are hyping something out of control, but that guy didn't. It was that funny. It was that good. It was really that good and that funny. So if you're watching on TV, the moment Doc starts in on Tony Brothers, you can see Austin coming into the frame and throwing up the tee. And he kept at it. He's standing about 3 feet from Tony Brothers, and he's working that tee like a boss. Like, some people think that Austin Rivers is an agitator, a pot stirrer, but he really isn't. He really isn't. Don't take my word for it. Just ask Austin himself.
I was just trying to help out the situation. Listen, guys, I'm not a, I don't ever like to escalate anything. Y'all don't know me for that. I've always been a peacemaker. So, you know, that's just 100%. You know, Doc's got to keep his cool.
I don't know what's funnier, him trying to convince us that he's a peacemaker, or that he said, quote, Doc has got to keep his cool. He's just trying to help out. He's just trying to bring some peace to the situation. Sure, he's not. I'm even all right with him calling his dad by his name. Actually, not his name, but his nickname. He docked him. Doc. Doc's got to keep his cool. Of course he was. Austin Rivers was already a legend from his time with the Clippers when he was jawing at the Rockets while on the bench in a suit and a walking boot and getting on them so much and getting under their skin and in their head to the point that the Rockets came after him in the tunnels of Staples, allegedly. So if Austin's doing that in a suit, in a walking boot, allegedly, I'm surprised he didn't grab the ref's whistle and just tee up his old man himself last night. Then again, he didn't have to. He knew Pops was going to get run. He could see the signs. He knows his old man. He knows Doc. He's seen it all before.
I knew it was coming. I could see him. I've seen that look before many times. So once he starts blinking his eyes fast, he starts. That's when I know he's about to level up. So I just started telling Tony to get him. They got him. He's out of here.
Man, I love that. Only thing missing from that is boom, out of here. Once he starts blinking his eyes really fast, I know he's about to level up. So I started yelling, Tony, get him. They got him. He's out of here. That is an amazing quote, too. And I'm going to say there was not a happier person on the planet than Austin when Doc did get teed up. He's clapping, he's laughing, he's celebrating, he's calling for the crowd to bring the noise as Doc was being escorted off the floor. Again, that's his old man, that's his dad. How insane is that? Almost as insane as Austin hitting his dad with a call me gesture as Doc cleared off the floor. Austin going with a call me, not even a call me, like a gesture, call me to his dad, and then hopping on Twitter after the game and tweeting, quote, "Well, Thanksgiving's going to be weird." And even better than that tweet is his sister, Callie, tweeting a JC blast.
Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
His sister did that. His sister got on Twitter and as like a standalone one-off tweeted, and I quote, this is her tweet. She just tweeted, "Jesus Christ."
Jesus Christ, it's Jason Bourne.
Like she saw her old man and her brother and she went with a JC blast.
Brother.
And then Austin posted a pic of himself calling for the tea on Instagram and Doc commented underneath, quote, "Hilarious, love you." See, it's all love. It's all love. It's all good. It's all good and it's all love. So do not come in here with your, "Hey, Rome." I haven't seen a father and son get that nuts at a sporting event in a long time. Regards, Tom Gamboa. Don't do that. I don't want those resets. And let me say this. If I need to come out on a side, I'm definitely Team Doc. I mean, I'm a big Austin guy, but in this particular case, I'm Team Doc. The refs screwed this up. They did screw it up. Listen to Doc lay out the situation.
I made a challenge. They actually said I was right in the challenge, but that I took over the 30-second time to call it. So then two refs walked over to me and told me that that means you get your, you don't win the challenge, but you get your timeout back. The arena actually put the extra timeout back up on the board. So we think we have two timeouts. I think it because two refs actually walked over to me and told me, told all of our assistants and told our players.
Right. He's 100% right. Tony Brothers admitted it afterwards, quote, after it was determined the Clippers could not challenge the play, they were incorrectly informed that they would retain their timeout. After Rivers was told that he lost his timeout during that challenge, as you can expect, he became upset and he was given an opportunity to try to get his composure and it didn't happen, end quote. Yeah, Doc will tell you why that didn't happen.
Now, listen, I'm fine with that if they had told me, but the officials can't tell me that I get my timeout back and then have me use it and then tell me after the fact you don't have it. That was big. I mean, those mistakes cannot happen. And what bugged me the most is the two officials who told me, they ran away. They just let Tony Brothers have it. That's, you can't do that. You can't do that in a four-point game. That could never happen. Can never happen.
Right. He's 100% right. That can't happen. If you screw it up, own it. But if the refs did that, then they wouldn't be refs, right? And we wouldn't have that scene that we had last night, right? How big was that scene? Like I said, it overshadowed Harden's 47. And it overshadowed Russell Westbrook's amazing comments about Pat Beverly. Roll this.
44, 47?
47.
Pat Bev tricked y'all, man. Like, you play defense. You don't guard nobody, man. It's just early round. Doing nothing. You seen what happened, 47. All that commotion.
You think all the getting up in guys' chest, 94 feet.
It's good, you know, to play hard. Playing hard is a part of the game, man. I don't, for people like me, I play hard every night, as well as he does. And that's a part of the game. He played hard. That's it. There's no, nothing else to it. He played hard. That's good, but doesn't make great decisions. Sometimes he does a good job defensively, but tonight, James took advantage of him and got what he wanted.
All right, I know I'm trying to jam a whole lot into this opening block, probably too much this time. Really quickly, let me read that. That's Russell Westbrook getting after Pat Beverly. We know he doesn't like him. He said, quote, and by the way, Pat, these are not my words. These are from Russ. Quote, "What James score, 44, 47? Pat Bev trick y'all, man. Like he's playing defense. He don't guard nobody, man. He's just running around doing nothing," end quote. Well, just running around doing nothing. That got back to Pat, who said, "Don't start that. Don't start that. I don't care about that." The thing is, it's not true. I know Russ hates Pat, and I know that goes back years. But what he said is not true. Harden was 0-for-6 from the floor when Beverly was on him. When Pat was allegedly running around doing nothing, the guy doing nothing in that matchup was Harden. So what he's saying is not true. Again, don't take my word for it. Listen to his own coach, Mike D'Antoni. He said it was huge when Beverly fouled out.
Big, big. At least, you know, James could take the coat off of him. I mean, he's like, you know, just bugging the hell out of me. I don't, James swat there, but I'm like, get out of here. But, you know, Patrick's one of my favorite players, without a doubt. He's all in it for the right reasons. He's what you want on your team to be. If you want to win, you get guys like that.
Damn, that was a night, wasn't it? Today's episode of The Daily Jungle is brought to you by CBS Sports HQ. It's the brand new streaming sports news network. It's live 24/7. It costs you nothing. That's right. It's sports coverage that's always on and always free. Always. I love it. Straight sports. Straight info and intel that we want. CBS Sports HQ is coverage that is always focused on the game. Tons of highlights. Breaking news as it happens. Fantasy advice and something that we all care about around here. Gambling picks, analysis that gets you the extra edge. I know when I turn on CBS Sports HQ, I'm going to get the tips and the trends that I need, and I want to win my bets. That's important to me. And don't forget, you can get access to all this great coverage free. I don't mean free for a week. I don't mean free for a month. I don't mean you need some special cable package. I mean free. When I say free, I mean free. You don't need a login either. Just download the CBS Sports app on your phone, Apple TV, Roku, Fire TV, or any other connected device at any time and watch CBS Sports HQ. No fake debates, just sports for real sports fans at the great price of completely free. Download the CBS Sports app and watch CBS Sports HQ right now. Hoosiers head coach Tom Allen is my guest. Great to have you on, Tom. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. Appreciate you having me on your show.
It is so good to have you on this show. So as I mentioned in the intro, IU is ranked for the first time in a quarter of a century. You've got that huge game Saturday at State College. What is the mood and the vibe like among the players right now?
Well, there's a lot of excitement. The confidence keeps growing each and every week. You know, we've worked really, really hard. This is my third year here as head coach and been building this thing step by step. It's been a slow process. You always want things to happen sooner than they do, but just proud of our guys, man. They've worked so hard. They've done everything we've asked them to do. They've bought in, they've trained, they've prepared. And to see them be rewarded for all their hard work has been a great, great feeling. And I just know that our fan base is excited about what we're building, and getting a chance to get ranked is just a kind of a nice reward for just kind of saying that you're doing things the right way that allows you to have success on the field. It gets recognized. It doesn't mean a lot more than that. But at the same time, we recognize that we're excited about what we're building and the way we're building it.
Indiana head football coach Tom Allen is joining us. You know, the thing that really impresses me is that while the fans, I know they're excited, they might be really impressed by this, but it seems like nobody inside the program is at all surprised. As an example, you told the team back in fall camp you believed it was a top 25 team. What did you see then that made you say that?
Well, I just felt like that, you know, being here enough, we had a core group of upperclassmen back that I thought their leadership had taken off to another level this offseason, and we really put an emphasis on that, and they bought into that, and I saw them infecting their teammates and the way that we had guys in every single position group that were pulling guys with them, and it elevated our work ethic, the mindset in the weight room. Our shrink staff done a phenomenal job, and that just started building a confidence to our team. And then you sprinkle in some really talented young players. We had the top two recruiting classes in the history of our program in our first 2 years here as head coach. And so those young guys are now have been here, and they're part of that growth and that confidence, and we knew we were going to have some more depth. And so I just felt like with all those things combined, I love the way the guys attack the workouts every day. And I told them, I believe they're going to be a top 25 football team. And they proved me right. And we didn't say it publicly, but internally we did. And I love the way our guys have embraced that and lived it out.
We're talking to Hoosier football, Indiana head coach Tom Allen joining us here in the jungle. A couple of weeks back, you beat Nebraska in their house to become bowl eligible. That was the first time IU had beat Nebraska in Lincoln in 60 years. I loved your emotion after the game and everything it meant. So how significant a moment was that for you and for the team?
It was powerful, you know, just to be able to get that type of win on the road in that venue, a place, like you said, hadn't won in 60 years. Just the history, just to be able to to in the way we won, you know, to be able to overcome some adversity and even throughout the week and then during the game and then find a way to get a big stop in the fourth quarter defensively and get the ball back and then never have to go off the field again because our offense ran the clock out. So I just was so proud of our guys and just knowing how much work they put in, how much our staff worked at it and how much this meant to our fans and our program. And I just knew it was huge and it just prompted a lot of emotion and I care so much and I'm a passionate guy, but I love this place. I love what we're doing. And it was just neat to see him rewarded on a national stage.
You've got IU number 24 in the polls. They are taking on number 9 Penn State Saturday. And then Tom, your quarterback, Peyton Ramsey, had a career high 351 yards, a couple of TDs that game. He had been the starter, but he was beaten out for the job in preseason. At that point, he could have left, but he didn't, and he was there when you and the team needed him. What's that say about him both as a player and as a person?
Well, I think it speaks volumes to his character, and I've said it many times. And I knew he had it, but then when it gets tested, and especially in that way when you're the starter and then you get it taken from you, it's hard, and it hurt him, and I know it did. It was hard for me to tell him face-to-face the day I had to, but I knew that I challenged him that day, and I really believed he would respond the right way, and I challenged him to be a great teammate, and he has been, and to be ready when called upon, and he has been, and he's been awesome for us, and now he's our starter again, and you just never know. It's a great life lesson, you know, adversity strikes, and he handled it like a man, and his character came shining through, and his whole team mindset, and he embraces LEO, which stands for love each other. It's a foundational component of our program, and he's lived that out every single day, and I'm so happy for him and proud for the way he's responded.
It's a great point. Tom Allen joining us for a few more moments. You know, I had Walter McCarty on the show yesterday, and he's from Evansville, and he said that being the head coach at Evansville means so much to him. You're from Newcastle, Indiana. Yeah. And you played there and you coached at places like Marion and Ben Davis. So what did it mean to you when you were named head coach at IU?
Well, it meant so much to me to represent my home state. And like you said, I've been a high school coach in this state for 10 years and played my high school football here. My dad was my high school coach, and being from Newcastle, which has a lot of strong ties to Indiana University, mostly for basketball, but just a lot of ties to IU. It's just a tremendous honor. It's a blessing. I feel so just proud to be able to wear Indiana on my chest and represent the place that I love and care so much about. So yeah, it's a powerful thing when it's personal, and it just makes it mean that much more when you're able to have the success that you dream about having.
You know, you mentioned you're the son of a coach, and you and your dad, in fact, he made sure that you sat down and you watched a lot of film with him, and I mean actual film on a projector. But despite that, the early plan was for you to major in business and become an accountant. Like, so mm-hmm. What were you thinking at that time, and what brought you back to football?
Well, you know, I went to college to major in that, and I started that my freshman year, and I love business. I love accounting. I love the numbers piece of that. That's just kind of what I've always had a passion for from that perspective. But I just, the more, in a lot of ways, God got a hold of my heart and said, man, you're wired to be, you can't be in an office 8 hours, 10 hours a day. I'd be a caged tiger probably in that environment. But just follow my heart, the passion that I have for impacting people and making a difference in their lives. And I just felt like that. So I switched from business to business education to become a coach and a high school teacher, and just had this passion to be able to use what God's given me to impact young men and help them grow and develop. And that's what we've been doing ever since. Now I do it at the college level. It's just really being able to you feel blessed when you can do what you love to do and you're really right in your strength zone.
Tom Allen, my guest. All right, finally then, another big opportunity and a challenge coming up this weekend. You've got Penn State. Now, the good thing about having a good season is that each game gets bigger and bigger. So how do you go about getting ready and preparing to face James Franklin and his team?
Well, as you said, tremendous challenge. You know, we've never beaten them at Penn State in the history of our program. So it's going to have to be one of those games where we have to play the very, very best football we can possibly play. They've done a tremendous job recruiting there, developing their players. But it does come back to the things we've done on a daily basis to get where we are now. That has to continue. It's that consistency in our preparation, the focus, the attention to details, the ability to be able to make those critical plays at the critical times in the game when it's 4th and 5 or 3rd and 7, you got to get a big stop, or you got to get a conversion, you got to make a special teams play. And that's what we had not been able to do in the past. That's what we've been doing here these last several weeks to allow us to win those close games. And so it doesn't change. You just got a little bigger stage, bigger opportunity. But I believe our team is prepared well, and we'll get a chance to go out and prove how well prepared we are on Saturday at Penn State.
And then quickly, Tom, specifically as you look at Penn State on film, what concerns you the most about them?
Their team speed. It's pretty obvious. Both sides of the ball, special teams, the O-line, D-line play is impressive. So I'd say their offense, defensive line sticks out the most, and then the overall speed of their players is impressive. So we're going to have to be on our A game.
You having a great year. They're number 24 in the AP poll, and they've got another great challenge coming up Saturday against Penn State. Their head football coach is Tom Allen. Tom, great to have you on the show. Really nice to talk to you. Good luck this weekend.
Thank you so much, Jim. Appreciate it. LEO.
Hey, look, we all love to refresh our snack drawers, right? When was the last time, though, you refreshed your sock drawer? If you can't remember, it is probably time to do so. Bombas socks are made with comfort innovations like arch support, a seamless toe, and a cushioned footbed. All socks speak for super comfortable. Awesome. They come in hundreds of colors and styles, and that makes them perfect for men, women, and kids. Let me tell you about my Bombas. I love them because they feel great, they look great, and I know the company behind them, and I know that company's mission. And they've got a brand new line of merino wool socks that are crazy. They're made from soft, warm, and naturally moisture-wicking merino wool, designed with all of Bombas' classic comfort features, from keeping cool and dry on your morning run to staying comfortable in your office's freezing air conditioning. My studio is about 30 degrees. Trust me. The Bombas socks are ready to work as hard as you do. And for every pair of socks you buy, Bombas will donate a pair to somebody in need. Buy your Bombas at bombas.com/Rome right now and get 20% off your first purchase. BOMBAS.com/Rome and get 20% off. Bombas.com/Rome. We are talking to head coach Craig Smith. Craig, it's nice to have you in the jungle. How are you?
I'm great, Jim. Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Good to hear it, Coach.
Fired up to be in the jungle, baby.
Love it. Love it. That pumps me up, Craig. Really glad to hear it. I've got so much to get caught up with you on, but let me start right here. You're coming off that win over Denver. You jumped out to an 18-5 lead in the first 5 minutes. So from a coaching standpoint, how pleased were you with the way your guys started and how they handled their business?
Really excited. I mean, that was the big key to the game. They were young and inexperienced, and it's always important to get out to a good start. It's not, you know, do or die, but anytime you play a team that's inexperienced and we're playing them at home, and we got a lot of experience returning, we just felt like it was very, very important to get up on top early because now, you know, fear, worry, and doubt starts to come into play. And so when we jumped on top like that, that was a big key to the game, and we really never looked back.
Utah State head basketball coach Craig Smith is my guest. Now, Craig, I had Indiana football coach Tom Allen on the show last hour. They're ranked for the first time in 25 years. You came into the season at number 17, which is the first time the program has been ranked in the preseason in nearly 50 years. So when you and the program are in a spot like this, how do you go about handling that pressure and the expectations? What is your message to your team?
You know, pressure is a privilege, and I think you got to embrace those expectations. And trust me now, a year ago when we were preseason ranked number 9 out of 11 in the Mountain West, there were no expectations. And as a coach, and I think as a player, you want those expectations. The beast not having any. And so, and that's the beauty of Utah State and Cache Valley and Logan, Utah, is we have a very passionate fan base. We have a fan base that loves Aggie basketball, and they get out and support it. One of our graduate assistants on staff, Brandon Ubell, played at Nebraska. The last 2 years, Nebraska was in the Big 12, and the first 2 years, Nebraska was in the Big 10. And like he told me after our second game when we beat Weber State, he's like, Coach, I've never been a part of a fan base that's this rabid and this passionate and this into the game. And we've had close to sellout crowds now our first two of the three games. And so that's exciting, and you want that, and you got to embrace that. You know, at the end of the day, polls are awesome. I'm not sure they mean a whole lot, but the one thing it does tell you is the level of respect that you've earned. So when you're ranked preseason number 9 out of 11, probably haven't earned a whole lot of respect. Obviously now, you know, being preseason favorites and being 17th in the country, we've earned that respect, but it doesn't mean anything. You still got to go prove it every day.
We're talking to Utah State head coach Craig Smith. I know exactly what you're talking about. When you talk about that region of the state, when you talk about the fan base, Craig, I went to UC Santa Barbara in the 80s when Utah State and UCSB were in the Big West. Man, they gave us hell every time. That was always a tough place to play. They always played hard. The fans were rabid. I know exactly what you're talking about. But explain this. Preseason polls might not mean a whole lot, but you were picked to finish ninth in the conference, as you point out, and all you did was win 28 games, a share of the regular season title, and the conference tournament. It was an amazing run. How do you explain then what you and the team did last year?
Well, it was a little bit of the perfect storm. We had an unbelievable group of guys, and we do this year as well. Certainly, we have some talent. Sam Merrill is a very, very good player. He ended up being the Mountain West Conference Player of the Year. He's got a legitimate chance to be an NBA player, and he wasn't even on the NBA radar, 16 months ago. And so, Namias Keita is a guy that we brought in, 6'11" from Portugal. Kind of came out of nowhere, just kept improving, was the defensive player of the year, second team all-league guy, and he will be an NBA player. And then we just had a group of guys, our role guys were stars in their role. And I think that's the hardest thing to find a lot of times is guys that are all about the team, willing to do whatever it takes to win. And you find that when you have great character. And I know this sounds like coaches talk and cliche, but I don't care. If I own my own business, if I was doing what you were doing, you have to surround yourself with great people that take accountability, that are passionate about what they do, and that are all in, And when I say all in, it's like pregnancy. Either you're pregnant or you're not, right? You either have to be all in or you're not. You can't tippy-toe around it. And fortunately for us, we had a great coaching staff that's all in, had an excellent group of young men in the program that were all about it, and they didn't listen to the noise, right? They believed that we could do it, and that's all that matters. And we went on a crazy run, winning, I think, 17 of our last 19 games. One of those two losses was to Washington in the NCAA tournament. And so now they have a taste. For all the things that we did, Jim, last year, we accomplished so many things in the first time in the history of a well-traditioned Utah State Aggie men's basketball program. Quite frankly, the season ended in a very bitter way. Like, our guys have a big-time chip on their shoulder right now, and we feel like we got to go out and prove something, not only to ourselves, but quite frankly, to everybody else that's out there.
Utah State head basketball coach Craig Smith breaking it down. So one of the messages to the team last year was you have to set outrageous goals. When you have a year like you just had, and then you come into this season, and you've got that returning talent, and you've got the size that you have, how outrageous can you get with your goals now?
It was funny last year because we always talked about our goal being to win the Mountain West Conference tournament, get to the NCAA tournament, win when we get there, and maybe we were the butt of the joke, at that time. But it's always funny until you go do it. And that team did it. And now, our goal is to get back there, obviously, and I think the sky's the limit. We do have six returners that play quality minutes. Namias Keita hasn't played yet this year. He had a knee injury this summer. And hopefully we'll get him back sooner than later. And obviously he's a big part of it. But we have nine new guys in our program. Three of those guys are redshirting. And so we have six other guys that we're really trying to get caught up to speed with our language and how we do things and our philosophy. And it's been fun. Clearly we've gotten better the last 10 days. And I know this is a cliche, but truly, let's just go earn it every day. Right? When you walk into your job and you're a passionate dude, you're a fiery dude, and that stuff is contagious. And I'm guessing you walk in with a little bit of an edge every day, ready to roll. And so that's got to be our mantra. Let's go prove it every day. Let's go earn respect every day. And when you do that, people forget the men's basketball season last year. Our first practice was September 28th. And our NCAA tournament game when we lost was March 22nd. So literally you're 6 days shy of a six-month season. So if you truly aim to get better every day as a team and an individual, it's amazing how far you can go.
He is the head basketball coach at Utah State. He's Craig Smith. I got to ask then, when you talk about outrageous goals, to me, Craig, your journey is proof of the power of outrageous goals. As an example, you're from a small town in Marshall County, Minnesota. For those who do not know, how small is your hometown and what was life like growing up there?
Jim, you're on top of it, man. Stephen, Minnesota. Look it up. Stephen, I would say Stephen, Minnesota. It's about like South Canada. So When I grew up, the population was 907. Now when I go back, it's like 596. So I graduated number two in my class. There were 18 of us.
Wow.
So I'm a salutatorian, for crying out loud, and I still couldn't be in the top 10% of my class. But it was an amazing – my parents were phenomenal. In fact, it's my dad's birthday today. He turned 72 today. So I know he's listening, and I texted him. I was like, can you believe it? I get to be on the Jim Rome show today.
Happy birthday, Pops.
He knows how fired up I am about that. But had an amazing childhood. My parents taught us just to work hard, treat people right. And you know, we know the problem. You come with an excuse of, you know, well, Dad, I couldn't do this because of, or Mom, I couldn't. You know, my mom owned their own daycare for 34 years, so I was raised in a daycare. I'm the oldest of five boys. And, you know, there was always like, well, we know the problem, but let's be a part of the solution. So figure out a way to get the solution right. And amazing people there. Now, when I moved to Utah, I was like, man, you guys don't have no idea how lucky you are. There's no bugs, no humidity. Sun's out every day. There's no wind. You know, you can play golf every day or go up in the mountains. And they're like, well, wait till winter. And I'm like, you have no idea what winter's about if you knew where I came from. So it's been an amazing journey on our 24th year now. And this place at Utah State is a special, special place. And we're so fired up to be here.
Craig Smith joining us. I mean, I could keep doing this. I could just keep throwing you lobs for the next couple hours. I want to ask you about this, though. There's this legend, a lot of legends, but legend that when you were a senior in college, you were also a high school coach and a student teacher, and you were driving 160 miles per day. Is that really true? And if so, what was that like?
That is true. My fifth year of college, I got married to my beautiful wife, Darcy, and we've been married for 24 years now. We're going to celebrate our 20th. She's always wanted to go to Hawaii. She's never been there. So we're hoping to go to Hawaii to celebrate our 25th anniversary next year. And I know your listeners really care about that. But
I do.
Yeah, I did. I was student teaching in Hallock, Minnesota, and I was a head high school coach in Stephen, Minnesota. And I was just got married. I was living in Grand Forks. So would hop in the, you know, my 12-year-old Grand Prix or 15-year-old Grand Prix or whatever it was, and drive up there and do my student teaching and come back and see my wife at night and just keep on doing the deal. But, you know, it's, as you know, Jim, and all your passionate listeners, like, when you love something, you know, I feel like I've never worked a day in my life. I'm the luckiest man on earth to be able to do something that we love to do, work with great people, and it is all about who you surround yourself with. And we have a phenomenal staff, and then be able to do it with these young men. It just, they feed you fuel, right? They get you excited to go that way. And so there's been a lot of things. We've worked at NEI schools, Division II, obviously low major, mid major, high major, and all the levels. And so, you know, there were days that I was the SID. You'd call in after the game when I was an assistant at Mayville State with the box score. And I was so fired up to get one quote in the paper, you know, or you're the custodian where you're sweeping the floor and making sure the trash is clean. Or at one job, I had a part-time, I paid our rent check by being I supervised a study hall for an hour and a half at Mayport High School one year. And so anyway, I could go on and on, but when you have to go do those things, I think you really appreciate everybody's that takes part in having a successful program, from the custodian to the SID to the marketing people to the academic people and everybody in between.
And then let's not lose track of the fact that this is a team that is currently number 17 in the AP poll, a team that is 3-0 and a team that won 28 games last year. The head coach at Utah State is Craig Smith. And we just talked some Utah State basketball, and it felt great. Craig, so good to have you in the jungle finally. Tell Pops I said happy birthday, and you and I will definitely do this again before the end of the season.
Awesome, Jim. I was fired up, man. I heard that music before you put me on, and it got the goosebumps going. So thanks for having me on, and go Aggies.
So remember how weird it was when Colin Kaepernick was told that there was going to be a workout? Remember when the story dropped and it was announced that there was going to be a workout on Tuesday? It was weird. It came off weird. The details sounded weird. And it's only getting more and more weird. Here is a series of tweets from Adam Schefter, starting with this. Quote, after initially agreeing to provide the list of personnel executives and coaches that would attend Colin Kaepernick's workout, the NFL has reversed course and said it will not, per sources. End quote. Well, that's pretty excellent. I mean, awesome. Off to a really strong start. Like, sure, we're going to set up a workout for you where any team in the league can attend. Just don't ask us who is going to attend or who that team is going to send, because we're not telling you. It's none of your business anyway. I mean, do you want the workout or not? And by the way, you've got 2 hours to let us know. But no, you don't get to know who's going to be there, and you've got 2 hours to let us know. Do you want it or not? Yeah, that's what I thought. And then there's this from Schefter. Quote, several executives with teams have reached out as a courtesy to Colin Kaepernick's representatives saying that they couldn't attend Saturday's workout and they were confused by the purpose of the NFL scheduling this workout. End quote. All right, so if the teams are confused by the purpose of the workout, then exactly what is the purpose of the workout? If the teams don't understand it, how the hell would Kaepernick or anybody else understand it? Again, what is the purpose here? What is the purpose here other than to cover their own back and maybe try to rip some positive pub? Wait, there's more. Because there is an NFL source, and it seems like that NFL source did not like the wording of the initial reports about the list of attendees. Quote, NFL source, league never promised to provide a list of attendees to Colin Kaepernick workout and said multiple clubs are attending. So, Kaepernick camp says it was promised list of attendees and can prove it, and an NFL source said league did not make that promise. It goes on, quote, another source in Kaepernick's camp said he was on the phone call when the NFL said how it would provide the names of attendees. On it goes, end quote. So, he said, she said. The league says, we never promised a list of the attendees. Kaepernick's rep said, yes, you did, and we can prove it. Like, on the surface, the list of confirmed attendees might not seem like a big deal. Like, if you get invited to a party, you don't ask the host, who's coming to the party? I need to know. But that's not what this is. Like, if you're Kaepernick's camp, and you want to make sure that it's not a sham, it's not a pub grab, it's a legit workout, you want to know who the legit people are who are going to be there. In other words, if I'm Kaepernick, I'm wondering, am I going to work out in front of head coaches and GMs, people that can make the actual decisions, or is it going to be some warm body who a team can just send? Because if it's not a legit workout, and it's a couple of scrubs or a couple of interns watching me work out, then it's not legit. Then I'm doing it for you and not for me, and I know that I've got no legitimate shot. I'm not going to waste my time. Awfully hard to argue it's a legit workout if it's organized on a Saturday during the season and nobody knows why it's happening and nobody who matters can actually show up because it's on a Saturday during the season. I mean, what I'm saying is, how NFL is this? I mean, this crew couldn't organize a one-car parade. Better yet, they'll create something like this workout, and then they'll mess it up. 48 hours ago, nobody even knew about this workout. But the league created it, told a few reporters that something was going to go down and that they should be prepared. And they told the reporters that before they told Kaepernick. I mean, that's kind of fishy in and of itself, right? Why is the media finding out about it before the player is finding out about it? And then the league masterfully butchers the rollout. I mean, honestly, if you're going to organize a sham workout, just to benefit you and get pub, at least do it properly, or don't do it at all. So instead of all that good, phony pub that they were hoping to get when they went on about this unprecedented move of organizing a workout for one player, something they've never done before, but they're doing it for this one player, the whole thing blows up in their face anyway. Like, time and time again, if there is a mistake to be made in a situation, the league office will make that mistake. And if there is not a mistake to be made, they will create a way to make that mistake. If they were really serious about this workout, they would have organized it months ago. They would have let everybody involved know well in advance so everybody would know exactly why they were doing it and so it would go smoothly. Instead, they drop it on Kaepernick, they give him 2 hours to accept, and they spring it on teams so they have no idea what's happening. Not only do teams not know why the workout's taking place, they don't even know what's involved in the workout. Charles Robinson reported last night, quote, "As of Wednesday evening, no defined throwing script was provided to Kaepernick, despite the event being less than 3 days away. There was also no indication from the league who Kaepernick would be throwing to. Under typical pro day circumstances, a quarterback is aware of the receivers and running backs he will be working with, as well as a defined structure of the program to suggest how many throws and routes will be expected during the workout," end quote. Wait, so is there going to be a guy with a broom? Is there going to be a guy with a tennis racket, a broom, and a tennis racket?
Baseball bat. Get this guy a tennis
baseball
racket.
Baseball bat, a tennis racket. Hey, by the way, I'm boycotting Space Jam 2. And you should too. How do you not let me in that movie, Bron? Why you gotta be like that, Bron? I let Mike in the first movie, but you won't let me in this movie. What is that, Bron? Don't hate, man. Anyway, we got a surprise workout. A surprise workout that's dropped on everybody, and we don't actually know what's going to take place in that workout. Yeah, that sounds like a great plan. Good job, everybody at the league office. Why don't y'all take a lap, get some water, call it a day. And yes, I've seen the suggestion from some parts that this is in response to teams reaching out to the league with an interest in Kaepernick. Albert Breer tweeted in part, "The NFL planned it in response to teams reaching to their football ops people on Kaepernick without taking any action." I mean, come on, really? The league is saying it planned this in response to teams who were interested in Kaepernick without taking any action? If they were so interested in Kaepernick, they'd work him out. You know, the way you work out any player all the time. If this is true, this is how whacked the league is. If this is true and the league was only responding to teams that were asking, if the teams needed permission to work him out, wouldn't that suggest that there's collusion? That the teams need permission? They need to contact the league for what? Since when do teams reach out to the league for permission? Permission to work out a player. Since when do they need permission instead of just working out the player? Does that not sound like collusion? Did anybody contact the league for permission to sign Nate Peterman? Because they should have. And then that permission should have been denied. Again, this whole thing's a joke. It's an embarrassment. If there's a mess to be made, the league will make it. And even when there's not a mess to be made, they will create one. And then they will make it. I mean, what's the point of that? And if they were looking for positive pub, they didn't get it. Meanwhile, Eric Reed, a former teammate who has dealt with this issue himself, who ultimately did make it back, is taking a look at this and says the entire thing is just so disingenuous.
It feels disingenuous. They told Colin that he has an opportunity and that the league will send representatives from each team, but it's a Saturday before game. Teams are traveling on Saturdays. What head coach or GM is going to be able to make this trip? But as far as I know, Colin's going to be there, and he's going to perform because I know he's ready.
What does he feel about it? Have you talked to him?
Yeah, of course I've talked to him. It's just strange, but he's ready.
And apparently he and his reps said to the league in response, "Hey, can we do this on a Tuesday the way we always do these things?" And the league said no. He said, "All right, can we move it back so I have a little more time?" And the league said no. That's why the whole thing's so weird. Hey, Jim Rome here. You want expert advice, then you go to a pro. And as a pro at sports, I've got some simple advice that can help you out. When you're hitting the sports book and a friend tells you he's got a sure thing, You want my pro tip? Go the other way. There is no such thing as a sure thing, and especially in Vegas. And when you're looking for pro tips on vehicle maintenance or repair, look no further than O'Reilly Auto Parts. Whether it comes to replacing your battery, getting advice on proper car maintenance, or just getting the best bang for your buck, their expert team can help you out every step of the way. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. He is Cruz Pedregon. Cruz, what's going on? How are you?
Romy, what is up, man? Good, great to be here. Appreciate you giving us the time.
Oh, it's good to have you back. Cruz, let me first ask you, the Raiders have won two straight. They're one back in the win column in the division. You've got the NHRA Finals in Pomona. How is life for you right now?
Life is good. You know, the fact that everybody was killing the Raiders after Coach Gruden came back and took the team over and trading some good players. But I think I even called up to your show one time, Roman, and I was like, you know what? I just feel like you need to let this guy do his thing.
You did, man.
And, hey, is it perfect? No. I've always said if they're 9-7, 500, 8-8 at the end of the year, that's going to be a victory because they're building. And a lot like drag racing, you know, it's about people. In fact, I've suffered from not having the best people. Now we're turning the corner, but you have to, just like Craig Smith, in fact, a tough act to follow, your previous guest, Craig Smith, what a great guy. But like he said it best, I said it a few times, you know, it's about the people you surround yourself with. And I believe that Coach Gruden is doing that. And some of the moves he's made have not been popular, but they're on their way.
Agreed. I didn't see it happening. And I talked to Bill Romanowski on our podcast this week, Cruz. And I said, look, man, especially after Antonio Brown, I did not see them having a good year at all. But they're right in the hunt. They're 5-4. They got a couple of games that are winnable. And if all of a sudden they've got 7 wins and they're dealing with Kansas City, who knows what happens? Cruz, for those who have not been out to Pomona Raceway for the NHRA Finals, what is that experience like?
Well, you need to check us out. This is our last race. 24 of 24 races ends this weekend, Friday through Sunday. We're about horsepower, Jim. We're the ultimate in speed and power. There's no car or jet that accelerates faster than one of our cars, 0 to 100 in like half a second, and they go 330 miles an hour in a little less than a quarter mile. So think about that. Like one block, out here on one of your streets, just one block to the next light is a quarter mile. So they accelerate like no other. They go faster every year. People ask me all the time, what does it feel like? And I tell them, you know, our bodies, we're all equipped with the same computers. We never get used to the speed. I only know what to expect, which calms my nerves a little bit. But every time I get in the car, I make a run down the track, Jim. It's like the first time I feel the acceleration. I'm a little nervous. The fumes from the nitro, makes my eyes water. A lot like horseradish, does with. So it's something you never get used to. But let me tell you, the adrenaline rush I get from it still to this day. I've been driving them 30 years now, Jim. It's amazing. That's why we want to get you out at the track. You know, drag racing is a little bit like hockey. It's maybe not the best on television I've heard, but when you go there, it's like no other. People always say, man, I didn't expect this. This is really cool, which brings me to our guest tomorrow. BIC's coming out, supposedly. And he's all talking about wanting to drive my car, but
are you gonna let him? I mean, you already put his name on your car.
Oh yeah,
are you gonna let him drive the car?
We did. You know what? And congrats to BIC winning. Was it 5 smack-offs now, Jim? 2 in a row?
Yes.
Yeah. But I do have to. If I can segue really quick to the smack-off. Every year, I think Rick and Buffalo. Here's the deal: delivery matters, and material matters, and if you can get both of those at the same time, obviously that's what's going to win. But I feel like Rick and Buffalo's material is pretty good, but to me, his delivery, I like that energy and that.
It's a show, man. It's a show. It's so,
and I like how he ends the show. I'm out. You know, he kind of does. Everything's dramatic, but hey, I got to give it to BIC. I'm looking forward to meeting him tomorrow. But hey, man, he brings the material. I heard his call yesterday. Was it Matt? He was getting back at Matt. One of the callers, I think it was Matt, and Matt from somewhere, and you kind of warned him, hey man, you may not want to go after that guy. He definitely hits on all 8 cylinders, and he has good takes, so good for him.
Cruz Pedregon breaking down the smack-off field. Very, very well done. So, Cruz, what about this season? For those who have not seen, how has this season gone for you?
Well, you know, Jim, we not very well. In football terms, I would say 7-9 season. We missed the playoffs. But, you know, like your guest earlier, Utah basketball coach said, it's about the people. And I haven't, as the owner, I haven't done a very good job at bringing all the pieces you know, it's much like a football team. You can have a great quarterback and a great coach or a great coordinator, but you have to have all the people, and the people make you look good. And so I feel like we're on our way. We've added some pieces late in the season, some late season team members. And I feel like I'm on the brink of hiring another guy that I think would put us over the top. So really, Jim, it's about the race car. They go fast. They make a lot of noise. But really, there's a strategy involved. Even though we're only racing short period of time on the track, there is a strategy. And there's some guys out there that do it very well. So congrats to the guys that are in the hunt. The Funny Car Championship's up for grabs between Robert Height, Matt Hagan, and Jack Beckman. So the NHRA is going to have a great final event, and we're hoping we can spoil those guys and get the Snap-on Dodge in the winner's circle. But I'm looking forward to it. It's my home. You know, grew up in Chino, so it's kind of like it's a home game for me.
We're talking to Cruz Pedregon. You've got the finals coming up this weekend in Pomona. You know, Cruz, I saw a few days back somebody dropped off some photos of your dad that you had never seen before. Now, you and I have talked about your dad, Frank. He was a legendary driver.
Right.
He passed away when you were just 17. What was it like to see those photos that you had never seen before?
Well, just to put it in perspective, I get through the years, I get a lot of photos and people coming up and they'll show me photos and I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And I want to act excited because they genuinely want to provide some cool photos of my dad. We were really, really little kids when my dad raced, so we didn't really follow. You know, we didn't know a lot was going on. But the fact that this gentleman in Vegas brought photos I'd never seen before, really, Jim, it brought me to tears because it was a picture of not only the race car my dad drove, but it was a picture of my dad up close, and you know, he had his long hair with his hat on, Pennzoil hat. So it really teared me up a little bit, and I called the guy and thanked him. And you know, it's just when you think you've seen all the photos, back in the day, right now with all the stuff we have going with social media, everybody's faces plastered all over. But back in the day, you know, like sports, all sports, there wasn't a lot of really good pictures of these athletes. In this case, my dad. So it really meant a lot to me, and it just goes to show that there's a lot of old time racers that are still out there rooting us on.
Cruz Pedregon joining us. Great story, Cruz. You're a huge sports fan, obviously. Back in September, Larry Holmes, who was one of my favorites. He used to come on the show all the time, even when he was champ. He came to visit you at Maple Grove Raceway. Is a huge boxing fan, is a huge fan of Larry Holmes, even if Hawk never heard of him when he called. It's all right, Adam. What was it like to spend time with Larry Holmes? What's he like?
Jim, it was unbelievable. In fact, you want to talk about, I started thinking when Caleb, my team manager, said, hey, man, we can get Larry Holmes out to the track. I'm like, yeah, right, okay. When I saw Larry, I about cried. I'm going to sound like a baby here, Jim, but it was so emotional for me because I remember all those fights, the Mike Weaver fights, the Ken Norton fights. I like yourself, followed the sport. You know, we're all Muhammad Ali fans, and I started paying attention to around the early 80s when Larry was right in the middle of his heavyweight run, you know, like 78
7 years,
beat Ken Norton for the title, and so, you know, and so I was right in the middle of that, and I always liked Larry because he never really got that. He was like after Muhammad Ali, so everybody felt like he's trying to be a Muhammad Ali.
100%.
And so I always felt like he was undefeated. I remember Don King used to always, you know, 35-0, Larry Holmes, 35, you know, and I remember Howard Cosell, I even told Larry, like, oh, hey, you remember when Howard Cosell interrupted Don King so he can let you, because he wasn't letting you talk. So, but to meet Larry there, you know, Jim, he just had a birthday, 7 years old. He looked really good for his age. Obviously the career he had getting hit in the head like he has, and all the, you know, the downside that comes with that, but he looked great. He's a big man. He's a big guy.
Yeah, he is.
He kind of jokes around. He kind of throwing his jab out there a little bit, but what an honor to have him out there. A great sport icon like that to come to our event. I really appreciated him being there, and it really meant a lot.
No, I'm glad that he came out, and you're right. He didn't get the respect that he deserved because he followed Muhammad Ali. I mean, the guy was the heavyweight champion of the world for like 7 years. He had that amazing jab. He had that great personality, and I loved him. I loved talking to him back then. So, Cruz, you got a big weekend coming up. You're back home. Have the clones been hitting you up now that you're in Pomona? What's it been like this week?
Oh, yeah, it's been great. Jimmy, every time I come on your show, you know, we get lots of love throughout the country, and we travel, you know, I don't know how many states. We're all over the place, but clones are alive and well in all the different states. So, yeah, this time it's a homecoming for us. And really for us is a little less pressure because it's the last race of the year, but we really want to do well. Man, it sucks getting beat first round like we have been. But, you know, I always say this, Jim, the champions rise. I've been a champion before. I know what it feels like. I feel like Snap-on and Mopar, everybody sticking behind me, they leave me alone. They let me do my thing. They know that we'll rise again. And so, but yeah, it'll be great to have the clones out there rooting us on. And I'm really looking forward to BIC coming out there, because at first we first talked about that. Remember, he took a shot at me. Oh man, you know,
pull that out, Alvin, to see if you have that.
Three seconds. What can you, you know? So, but to have him out here, you know, for me, he's a celebrity to me, Jim, and it's a great honor. It's great that you do this. In fact, I heard you say that might be the last one a couple times.
The smack off. Sometimes, man.
Come on, Jim.
You want better to leave them wanting a little more. Like, you don't want to be the athlete, Cruz, that stays around too long. So sometimes I think about that. I'm not messing with people. I'm not jerking with anybody. Sometimes it seems to me if we walk out on something amazing, that might be best. But then it's so good, and how do you not bring it back?
It's so good, and you do it once a year, Jimmy. Do it in the middle of the year, and I look forward to it. It's gaining momentum, so just hang in there with us another 15 or 20 years, Jim, with the smack off.
You know, I'll do that, Cruz. Listen, one last thought about something technical. You recently talked about dealing with some mechanical issues in the piston department. What kind of an impact can that have on your performance?
Well, the parts are not created equal. You put these engines together, and if they don't work properly, you really need to look at them. And the pistons are in the line of fire. They're the ones that are taking all the compression and all the fuel. So we had a piston that we felt didn't suit our particular setup. Not to say there's anything wrong with the piston or that company, but it just happened to be something that plagued us throughout the summer, and we didn't really figure it out until like a month ago. So the car's running good now. I want everybody to know that, hey, our Snap-on car's ready to win. We're fired up. We think we did run 329 miles an hour. Our first, we're knocking on the door at 330 the other day in Dallas. So we feel like we figured that out, but it's something that it was kind of like, it's kind of one of those things where there's no easy fix, because we start doing things. Well, maybe it's the fuel system. Well, maybe it's this. Maybe. So by the time we figured it out, 10, 11 races had gone by. So, you know, so that's kind of been the season. But, hey, no excuses. There's some good cars out there. We've had some good ups and downs. But I feel like we brought some good people in. We're going to get better, and we'll be ready for Pomona 2020.
All right, so Auto Club NHRA Finals, November 14th through the 17th, right here in Pomona. The fastest man in the jungle, Cruz, put those on real quick. You mentioned that you and Brad have kind of gone up and down a little bit. The BIC, I can tell how much respect you have for him. When you said that you guys have kind of gone up and down a little bit, you were talking about this. This is what Brad said when you offered to put his name on your car if you won the smack off.
Hey, shout out to Cruz Pedregon for volunteering to put the smack off winner's name on his race car for one race. Cruz, I don't want to look a gift horse in the mouth here, but dude, this ain't the Indy 500, man. You race NHRA drag cars that last for like 5 seconds. The only thing quicker than that with less publicity would be if Vic in NoCal volunteers to shout out the winner's name the next time he has sex. Brad and Corona!
This guy, why would you want to see this guy in Pomona? The BIC, there's nobody like him. Is he amazing, right?
No, it was good. You know, and we actually put it on there
Brad,
anyway.
Brad and Corona! Yeah.
poor Vic. Corona. But no, you know, we honored our deal. We put him on there.
It was great,
and,
too.
And you know, and it kind of grew some legs, and we followed each other on social. So, no, and, you know, for Brad to come out here to really see what it's like, I want to know what he truly feels about NHRA drag racing after he attends our event. Good, bad, or indifferent. I want to hear it, Brad.
He will tell you. All right. He is the owner and the driver of the Snap-on Tools Nitro Funny Car, a two-time NHRA Funny Car World Champion. Of course, the fastest man in the jungle. He is at heart a clone, Cruz Pedregon. Cruz, have an amazing weekend. Good luck. I know you represent well, and it's good to have you back on the show.
Hey, Jim, and congrats on your Hall of Fame. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Cruz. I appreciate that. Thanks so much. Cruz Pedregon doing what he does in studio. All right, let's break. We will come back. I've got an open segment, top of the hour. Daniel Jeremiah is going to join us as well. Phone lines are open. Brad and Corona.
Brad and Corona.
BIC. Time now for a sports update. Here it is. Rich Ackerman's got this one. He is Daniel Jeremiah. DJ, what's going on?
Hey, first of all, man, as someone who grew up in San Diego, there was nobody that was more of a no-doubt Hall of Famer than Tony Gwynn. That was until recently you got yourself in the Hall of Fame, buddy. Much deserved, and I couldn't be happier for you.
DJ, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you saying that. That means a lot to me, Daniel. Thank you very, very much. All right, that said, and I appreciate it, it is that time of year, the time of year where I'm watching you on social. Well, I always am, but especially now, because you are breaking down lots of film. You are listening to lots of Christmas music. How is your life right now?
Well, dude, you know where I live. I'm out in Murrieta, and it's hot out here. It's like 80 degrees outside, and I want fall. So I just cranked the AC to make it really cold. I've got a blanket. I've got a coffee. I've got Christmas music, and I've got, like, LSU wide receivers. Like, that's what I did yesterday. It was fantastic.
That is great. And I know you've got Hallmark Christmas movies, too, right? Has that started yet, and have you seen any?
Yeah, dude, I was on the road. I checked into the hotel with the Chargers up in Oakland. And, you know, like, I'm just getting some work done, but I wanted just some background noise, you know. So I just flip on the TV, and, like, literally what comes on, it's like a Hallmark movie, which I didn't know there was a difference between Hallmark Channel and Lifetime. Apparently those are two different channels.
Right.
But they're both in the Christmas movie business. Like, that's like the Yankees and the Red Sox, I imagine, in the Christmas movie space.
Man, no doubt.
But Rick Fox was in this thing. I mean, I was sucked in. I watched the whole thing.
Of course he was. Daniel Jeremiah is joining us. So, Daniel, I want to start first with Seattle-San Francisco on Monday. You and Bucky are doing a really cool thing. We are getting into how teams are built. Before we get into that, what did you make of how both teams showed up overall Monday night?
It was awesome, man. I mean, five full quarters of football, physical. Both defensive lines, you know, playing at a high level. Clowney, like, dude, that's the guy that I saw at South Carolina that was just, you know, an absolute freak, and took over a football game. This year, I mean, trade wise, Jim, you know, I love picks. You know, I'm a draft guy, and I love picks as much as anybody. But the value that the Seahawks are getting for Clowney, the value that Pittsburgh's getting for Minkah Fitzpatrick, the value, even though they gave up two ones, that Houston's getting with Laremy Tunsil, these are proven stud players that are having a big-time impact versus picks that you're hoping and wishing are going to be correct. So that's been an interesting subplot. But back to that game, and it was just fun. It was just a fun playoff atmosphere.
DJ, you mentioned Minkah Fitzpatrick. He's been unbelievable. Unbelievable, and you can see what he's done to solidify that back end and what he's done for that Steeler defense. At the time of the trade, though, did you like that trade?
My only question was, okay, where, you know, it was right after Roethlisberger got hurt. So, you know, my only thinking was, man, if this is it for Ben, you know, having a top 10 pick could maybe help you get the next guy if you don't think Mason Rudolph is that guy. That was my only reservation. Now, Minkah Fitzpatrick, I thought, was a stud coming into the draft. And, you know, I thought he would be really good there. I did not know that he was going to take it up to the level he's at. I mean, he's arguably in the mix. You know, he's definitely in the mix, I should say, for Defensive Player of the Year. And they found a way to win games like the Ravens used to win games back in the day, where you don't have to score a whole lot of points. The defense takes care of it for you. So he's 22 years old. The money's already been paid. They owe next to nothing for the next 2 years. And where they're going to be picking, which is probably going to be outside the top 15, they would never see anybody close to as good a football player as Minkah Fitzpatrick.
Daniel Jeremiah joining us in the jungle once again. DJ, there were a couple of moments in that game Monday night that felt like vintage Russell Wilson, especially that 3rd and 16. If we were to go back, what do you remember about your impression of him when he was coming out of college?
Well, I mean, Jim, first of all, I just went through this the scouting report the other day, and not just the evaluation of him as a player, but reading the background on him. And it was, I forgot some of this stuff. I mean, like, his dad used to wake him up when he was a kid at 6 a.m. every day, and they would go do, you know, baseball drills or football drills. I mean, this kid had a discipline instilled in him at such a young age. And then you go through and read the comments from the coaches at Wisconsin, it was the same thing. This guy's a machine, you know, in terms of how he approaches things. And, you know, he everything, literally in my report, even as a player, I'm like, literally the line was, I love everything about this player except for his height. It was just a tough sell at that point in time. You got a 5'10 quarterback, and you have to go back to Doug Flutie to find somebody at that size who's, you know, always played at a high level. So that was the knock, and obviously, in hindsight, it was a foolish knock. The guy was a stud coming out, and he's done nothing but be a stud his whole NFL career.
We are talking to Daniel Jeremiah. All right, so what about the guy on the other side, DJ, Jimmy Garoppolo? He had stretches of that game where I didn't think he looked that comfortable. Is it something you'd be worried about long-term, or is that more a product of George Kittle was missing the entire game and Emmanuel Sanders missed a big chunk of that game?
Yeah, I mean, there were some drops. When you go back and really study it, too, the tape, there were some drops in there that would have helped Garoppolo. There also were some interceptions that were dropped. But I would definitely say the difference, you know, one of the key differences in those two quarterbacks is Russell Wilson's supremely confident. And I don't know that Jimmy's reached that level of confidence yet. We're just seeing it, letting it go. There's a little bit of hesitation with him right now. But, I mean, look, George Kittle comes back. and what he gives him is all that run after catch. That makes a difference. But yeah, well, he's not where he needs to be for them to win a Super Bowl, but he's got time to get there.
Hmm. Now, as somebody who watches the game with a scout's perspective, what is it about Kyle Shanahan and the way he designs and calls plays that makes him so good?
He's different, man. He's different. He's got the base offense that works, that's tried and true, the stuff that his dad was carving the league up with, you know, decades ago. And then every week there's just these little wrinkles, a lot of times in the run game. And a lot of it's just used to get better angles for blocks, motioning guys, just how they formation. It's just different, man. And when you talk to players around the league, and I'm sure you're doing the same thing, the way they talk about this guy, like, it's hard for players to be impressed. And they're like, dude, this guy's a genius. I mean, like, this guy, you know, he knows it's a touchdown when he calls the play. He'll put in the play during the week of practice and tell you this is going to score. Sure enough, that play scores. So he's got a different mind, man.
Which is why I wanted to ask you about him. We're talking to Daniel Jeremiah for a few more moments, which brings me to Pete Carroll. You know, like, Pete can be an easy target for people, DJ, because of all the positivity, all the passion, the energy. You know, people think that it's shtick. But the fact is, you look at that he's on the verge of a seventh double-digit win season in the last 8 years. So how effective is all that effort that he puts into positivity and mindset?
Well, it's interesting because we were just recording an interview for our podcast. Me and Bucky had Lou Holtz on this morning. And, we asked him about Pete Carroll because Pete Carroll was a GA for him. I'm like, dude, was this guy this energetic as a graduate assistant? And he's like, oh, yeah, that's who he is. So I think why some people might think, that's not real, that's inauthentic. No, that's who that guy was in the 70s when he was coaching with Lou Holtz as a grad assistant. So he is who he is. And Jim, when I look at the way they play it, yeah, I see the energy, I see the passion. But, man, they're aggressive. He was like that. You remember at SC, it was like they'd be in games at SC in the first quarter. It'd be fourth and two on their own, like 35, and he's going for it. And just nobody did that. Nobody coached with that much aggression and confidence. And I think that seeps down to your team. I mean, they feel that. They feed off that. And all that success, I mean, as some of these organizations that take so long to rebuild and retool, these guys were in the playoffs in the middle of a rebuild. I mean, they didn't take a break from the postseason. I mean, that's impressive.
You know, I'm watching them pressure the quarterback, DJ, Monday night, and the way they're flying around, I'm thinking to myself, that defense is not what it used to be. They're not what they used to be. And I'm not saying they are, but they're really aggressive, and they're still flying around. You know, you and Bucky are such a great listen, and for a number of reasons. Obviously, both of you have spent time in that league, and you've got the insight and the intel and the background, the experience. Great, great chemistry between the two of you. Something that keeps coming up on this show is culture. Every time I talk to a coach, it comes up in conversation. If I don't bring it up, they bring it up. You and Bucky recently did a really deep dive with James Franklin about building a culture. What was your biggest takeaway from that convo?
You know, it was great. And this is something we've had a chance to talk to so many different coaches about all this stuff. And one of the things James Franklin said I thought was interesting was that, you know, so many people have their kind of your philosophy and what I do at this place, I'm going to get a new job and I'm going to do the exact same thing there. And it's a proven formula and it works and that's how we do it. And he just talked about how, man, before you come in there and beat everybody over the head with your vision of what you want to do, you need to get in there, you need to talk to the players, you need to talk to people around the program, you need to talk to people in the community, find out what they have, what they don't have, what they like, what they don't like, and get a lay of the land, and that's going to help you, you know, kind of cast your vision of what you want to do. And he told a story about getting to Vanderbilt, and they had a dumpy locker room. So when he got there, he talked to a bunch of people, and that kept coming up. So as soon as he got there, the first thing he did is got the administration to say, hey, we're going to get a new locker room. It's not going to cost us that much money. But at least everybody in the program is going to know, I know there's a problem that they've had, and I'm going to get it fixed and solved immediately. And he was like, that gave me instant credibility with them, that he knew I was kind of, and I was there on their side. And I think some people look at that and say, oh, that's kind of cheesy, that's kind of hokey. Like, dude, the guy won it from Vanderbilt. Okay. It ain't easy, man. And what he inherited at Penn State was a mess. And they're a perennial kind of top 10 team. So he's doing something right.
Let me finally ask you this. There's been, in terms of prospects, and again, you're breaking down a lot of tape, there's a lot of buzz, Daniel, about LSU quarterback Joe Burrow lately. Back in August, you admitted, well, I mean, you wrote, it's obvious, you didn't have a lot of chance to see him yet. That's understandable. Now you've had some time to watch him and watch tape. What kind of thoughts do you have?
He's really good, man. I was joking with the GM the other day that it's kind of one of those deals where you're like, yeah, what do you think of Joe Burrow? Well, you know, he's pretty good. I mean, I like him, I guess. You know, he's accurate, he's tough, makes good decisions. He can move around a little bit, extend plays. Yeah, isn't that kind of what you want your quarterback to do? Like, what don't you like?
Right.
Like, he doesn't have a huge arm. Who cares? I mean, that's like the knock on him. He just doesn't have a huge arm. But he moves the football up and down the field. He's tough. He makes good decisions, accurate, all that stuff. I mean, all the stuff that makes a good quarterback, this kid has it.
So, final thought. What about here, closer to home, USC true freshman Keaton Slovis? I know he's not – I mean, he's nowhere near draft eligible. Have you watched him very much, and what are your thoughts of him? He looks like he might be a star.
Yeah, I think he's really good, Jim. He came in and I want to say was the Stanford game, you know, when Stanford was actually, you know, well thought of at that point in time. They've had a rough year, a lot of injuries. But he stepped in and immediately was, like, attacking down the field. Like, this was not check down Charlie, you know, freshman in there scared to death. Like, this dude was like, okay, it's my turn, and he let it rip. And he's played like that. Now, he, like, BYU, you know, he has some turnovers, and that's expected, but I love the fact that dude, he plays kind of a no-flinch style of quarterback for a young kid. That's not normal, so that's fun to watch.
DJ, final thought really quick. David Shaw, you mentioned Stanford. Does he, talking to the people that you talk to and knowing what you know yourself, do you think that he would take a shot at the NFL, and if so, is that time coming soon?
Well, a lot of teams have been interested in him over the years. I think that he can scratch that itch anytime he wants to. I know this is a frustrating year for him up there at Stanford. He loves it up there, though, Jim. So I don't know if he'll ever do it, but I think the opportunity will be there whenever he wants to.
NFL Network analyst, 8 years in an NFL scout. Follow him on Twitter at MoveTheSticks. Check him out with Bucky Brooks with their podcast. He is a friend of the program. DJ, such a great job. Really appreciate you, man. Thank you so much.
You're my guy. Thanks, Jim. Appreciate you.
Good night now!